The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is generously underwritten by Brian Lee Funeral Homes, located in Raleigh, Garner, and Anger. They can be reached at 919-832-8225. They believe every life is unique and deserves to be honored so that every funeral is as unique and special as the person it represents. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, Rivalry Brews. No, it's not Silicon Valley or Austin or Seattle. Another city is competing with the Triangle for tech jobs, Charlotte. And the story begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with a second headline, High Tech Stakes, Charlotte looking to compete with the Triangle in the tech space. And this article is written by Lauren Onisorge. Igor Jablokov is where he wants to be. The CEO of startup Prion, Jablokov is eyeing a trillion-dollar market as he builds his company in Raleigh, a metro that he believes could soon be the new epicenter for artificial intelligence, or AI, research and development. Jablokov says he wouldn't be surprised if the Triangle and AI are someday synonymous, just like Silicon Valley has traditionally been with entrepreneurship, because of the presence of firms such as SAS Institute and IBM. And that's why he's here. Jablokov, whose last startup, Yap, that would later become Alexa, was sold to Amazon, had a choice of metros for Prion. He could have stayed in Charlotte, where he led Yap 10 years ago, or he could come to the Triangle and be near University Innovation and its resulting talent pool. He chose the latter and reiterates that the geographic decision also helped him in raising $25 million. Jablokov is not alone. Founders behind Smart Sky Innovations, which just this year announced $32 million in new financing, believe Raleigh-Durham played a big role in reflecting credibility for the product and people behind the research. Smart Sky is working on a new system for in-flight Wi-Fi and moved from Charlotte to Morrisville to be near a very large pool of highly educated, skilled people, says CEO David Helfgott. And he says that, like in the case of Prion, it has worked out. It's working great, he says. It's a great area. But a 2.5-hour drive to the southwest part of the state, a quiet giant is waking up. Charlotte sees an opportunity. I'll say the same thing I say everywhere, says Dan Roselli, the entrepreneur behind Packard Place, the entrepreneurship accelerator in Charlotte. Communities are coming to steal your tech talent. The war for talent is not a new concept, and you had best up your game because there's some really cool, innovative communities doing great work. If you don't think you are constantly at risk for being a step behind, then you are a step behind. While he doesn't think the Triangle is in any immediate threat from Charlotte, there are two very different communities. COVID-19 has changed the game. With the work-from-anywhere concept taking off in tech firms throughout the country, competition for talent has never been more intense. Add in the slow and steady rise of Charlotte's technology sector, and it's game on for North Carolina's two largest metros. Brooks Rayford, CEO of the North Carolina Technology Association, says those doubting Charlotte's tech prowess should just look at his group's monthly IT job trends report. The numbers are not far off from Raleigh's. In the month of January, for example, the Charlotte Metro reported 9,200 job openings, just behind Raleigh's 10,601. Durham Chapel Hill had an additional 3,371. Churn from Charlotte's big companies really helps its talent pool, Rayford says, and firms tend to follow big businesses. And the fact that Charlotte is naturally such a big business town, there's a natural follow, he says. There's a draw to them from companies serving that market. For Charlotte, the recession proved to be a pivot point. Roselli still cringes when he thinks about 2008 in the Queen City, when a city known for its big banks was in danger of crumbling. The uncertainty trickled out of the city's big employers, Bank of America and Wells Fargo, and humbled Charlotte for what felt like forever. Just a few years later, Roselli had left the tech firm he had helped build, Red Ventures, and was thinking ahead to what's next. The cloud that the recession left on his city lingered in his mind as he decided to use his talents to give his city a new legacy. By creating a physical hub for entrepreneurship, It could change how the ecosystem all interacted, he says. Already there were some big names starting to take off, such as LendingTree, Avid Exchange, and Red Ventures. The pieces were in place, but he needed public support for his plan. A chamber trip to Seattle became the clincher. Roselli says officials saw firsthand how entrepreneurship built its economy. Charlotte, in the financial crisis, had an moment, he says. It had all been built on financial services doing well. Then all of a sudden, the mainline Charlotte looked at that and said, that's a really risky place to be. So Roselli and others pitched positioning entrepreneurship and technology as a risk mitigation strategy to economic developers. And it worked. Once we got the tech community going, now all of those things that have been in Charlotte's favor for big companies click in, he says. Many of the same attributes that attract national players to Raleigh play into the Queen City's value proposition, including cost of living and quality of life, says Fran West, a business recruiter for the city of Charlotte. While the Triangle has the Carolina Hurricanes and a robust college sports scene, Charlotte has the Carolina Panthers, Charlotte Hornets, and a Major League Soccer franchise on the way. And Charlotte has a much larger international airport, a big notch in its favor. And perhaps its biggest differentiator is its confluence of Fortune 500 headquarters, including Honeywell, an industrial manufacturer that positions itself as a technology company. All of a sudden, now that we've got enough of a tech community here, people can see themselves in the momentum, Roselli says. And it's a larger city, he adds. It's just bigger enough than Raleigh to make a difference, he says. West says the tech bent of existing players helped speed up its credibility. Sure, Charlotte has been known as a banking town, but now you bank on an app, she says, expanding its scope. Initially, on the entrepreneurship front, Charlotte tried to position itself as a fintech capital, made easy by the presence of big banks. But over the past few years, it's leveraged that position to attract general technologists, too. And it, like Raleigh, has been appearing on several best of tech lists, further solidifying its case to outside talent. We used fintech as a tip of the spear on how to build a tech and entrepreneurial community in Charlotte, Roselli says. Energy and clean tech, boosted by the proximity to Duke Energy, followed. And today, its entrepreneurship cluster spans the spectrum. Roselli says it has been able to get to this point by focusing on its strengths. We're not going to play in life sciences, we're not going to play in medical devices, but there are core areas that Charlotte has, he says. Tariq Bukhari, a Charlotte City Council member and founder of the Carolina FinTech Hub, admits the Queen City has long been irked by the Triangle's reputation as the state's flagship tech center. In the spirit of good competition, we've built on that chip on the shoulder, he says, crediting the city's targeted approach. We go out and with very much a spearfishing mentality, not throwing the net out and trolling for whatever happens to come in, Bukhari says, adding that when an opportunity arises in fintech, we recruit that company. Even when Charlotte may not be on the list, we force it on the list. And Charlotte's efforts are working well. Last year, CompTIA, spelled CompTIA, identified Charlotte as America's top tech town. Raleigh was number two. And Durham-Chapel Hill, considered a separate metropolitan statistical area by the feds, landed at number 15. VC dollars bolster Triangle. But the Triangle has something Charlotte can't match, and that's venture capital. A broad sweep of securities filings and press releases shows that so far in 2021, Triangle area growth companies have raised at least $186.9 million. Securities filings show Charlotte has raised about $17.6 million. Roselli admits it's a big problem. A strong tech ecosystem starts with entrepreneurship, and entrepreneurship is boosted by the presence of capital. Charlotte has two locally based venture funds, TFX Capital and Roselli's own venture, CFE Ventures. Charlotte has always been great for growth and private equity, he says. We have $800 million funds coming out of our butt. When you need a $50 million round, Charlotte is your town. The issue is at the venture level. The Triangle boasts the state's most prolific venture investor, Co-Founders Capital. It has firms such as Bull City Ventures, InterSouth Partners, and Idea Fund Partners. And while Charlotte has a few angels and outposts, Idea Fund Partners, for example, has a partner based in the Queen City, and GrowTech Ventures has an office in Charlotte. It can't compete when it comes to investors contributing across a startup's lifetime. Nor does it have the university research dollars that frequently help push Triangle companies over the finish line. Roselli says the Queen City shouldn't waste its efforts trying to be Raleigh. Let's stop whining about that and focus on what we do have, which are major Fortune 500 firms, major healthcare systems, he says. But he says the next hill the city will have to climb as a community is to attract those venture capital dollars. COVID-19, too, has been a differentiator, hitting Charlotte's tech sector harder. Rayford's IT Trends report shows how competitive the two talent pools are. While Raleigh's IT job openings grew in January year over year by 22.5%, the report shows the number of open positions in Charlotte actually shrank by 22%. Pre-pandemic, at more than 11,300 jobs, the Charlotte Metro actually beat Raleigh when it came to open jobs. Raleigh had nearly 8,000 open jobs, with Durham Chapel Hill contributing another 4,000. The fact that Charlotte could compete with Raleigh and Durham says a lot, Rayford says of the numbers. As the vaccine is deployed to more and more groups in North Carolina, both regions are optimistic that jobs will keep coming. Triangle forges ahead. In the meantime, Raleigh is not sitting still, even when it comes to Charlotte's sweet spot of fintech. Recent funders, such as that of Raleigh-based fintech Constellation Digital's $18 million raise in February, show it too, has the chops. And Michael Haley, Economic Development Director for Wake County, says he's seeing a sizable interest from the fintech community in the Triangle. Justin Benson, CEO of Durham payments orchestration software firm Spreedly, admits Charlotte has the fintech title for now, but he says that title doesn't mean much as the Triangle's lack of that moniker hasn't impeded its ability to innovate and create jobs. I think of us as a software company that is in payments versus a payments company, he says. There's good talent for building software companies, and we hire remotely when we need to augment domain-specific expertise. It hasn't been a big impediment for us up to now. Bakari says the Triangle just can't match what Charlotte has built. While his Carolina FinTech Hub has a Triangle chapter, it was really anchored around BB&T, he says. When BB&T became Truist and moved its headquarters to Charlotte, the chapter fizzled. We're just now getting back into those conversations, Bakari says. But there are other opportunities for Raleigh to create a niche brand for itself when it comes to specialized technologies. Already, the region is known for its open source innovation. Case in point, Red Hat. Software developers such as Pendo have been actively and swiftly growing in girth downtown. And recent investments by Raleigh-based Bandwidth show continued prowess in communications technology. At recent events such as IBM's pick of NC State University for a quantum computing lab, and the pieces could be in place for a creation of an advanced technology cluster in Raleigh-Durham that could reach new heights. Economic developers, much like City Boosters, emphasize that Raleigh and Charlotte's assets complement each other, and the cities are not viewed as competitors. Chris Chung, CEO of the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina, says his team typically pitches multiple sites to top prospects and that North Carolina is unique in that it has more than one competitive metro. Roselli, when pitching Charlotte to outside tech entrepreneurs and investors, says the region's proximity to Raleigh is helpful. The cities work together to make North Carolina a talent magnet, he says. We think 2021 is going to be all about growing again, he says. And he adds that North Carolina, not Raleigh or Charlotte, stands to be the real winner. Think about the magic that could happen, Roselli says, if Raleigh and Charlotte teamed up in the tech world. Now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the continuing series, The Promise Of. The headline, Brewing Up a Collaboration, how Celeste Beatty and Brianna Brake are working together to help their breweries recover from the COVID-19 pandemic. And this article is written by Connie Gentry. About this project, the project name is based on a historical reference relating to Union Army leader William Sherman's promise of giving 40 acres to slaves after the Civil War. That promise, which came to be known as 40 Acres and a Mule, never came through as President Andrew Johnson rescinded the order after taking office. They didn't look like me, that's what Celeste Beatty says about the people who helped her launch a business and get to where she is today. And she's okay with that. Not just okay, she's committed to conversations with people across all walks and races. Diversity of race as well as gender is sorely lacking in the beer brewing industry. But change requires conversation with everyone at the table, better yet, everyone at the bar sipping a brew together. Beatty, who along with her two brothers, Carl and Purnell, are founders of Harlem Brew South in Rocky Mount, acknowledges that she's learned a lot from the demographic most often running breweries. Some of those white-bearded guys have been very helpful to me, she says. This is a business and a community that is based on conversations. Of the divisiveness across the country, she says, we've got to bridge these divides, whether it's the boardroom or the tap room. At the end of the glass, people are talking, and I'm seeing a lot of collaboration during this pandemic. There's more we can do in the craft beer industry, and I want to help bring more people to the table so we can find our common ground. She's not alone. In 2017, the Brewers Association created a diversity committee to work toward more inclusion in the industry. But the association's 2019 survey of gender, race, and ethnicity concluded, brewery employees are disproportionately white and male relative to both the general U.S. population and where breweries are located. The Beatty siblings are addressing those challenges head-on. They recently leased space in a 12,000-square-foot tobacco warehouse that is connected to the Opportunities Industrialization Center, or OIC, of Rocky Mount. Rocky Mount is a beer desert, Beatty says, which explains one aspect of how they came to choose this town for Harlem Brew South, which will house a brew pub with a tasting room, a pilot brewing system, and a production brewery offering brewing education and space for community collaboration. The road to Rocky Mount started in New York with the success of the inaugural Harlem Brewing Company and the brew pub music venue that Beatty opened in the Manhattan neighborhood in 2000. In 2018, Harlem Brewing Company won the People's Choice Award for Best Beer in New York City, determined by attendees of a four-week Best Brews of NYC event where they cast votes to determine the winner. The pandemic had a huge impact on our New York operations. Our company sales are down more than 70%, Beatty says. In 2020, she closed her Harlem Brew Pub, although she continues to distribute her beer in that state as well as in North Carolina and Virginia. Beatty has a strong connection to North Carolina. Her father is from Wilmington, and her mother lives in Winston-Salem, where Beatty attended high school. So she looked to this state as a perfect place to pivot. But her decision to participate in a Rocky Mount brewery preceded the pandemic. In 2017, while speaking about home brewing at the Art of Cool event at Durham's American Tobacco Campus, Beatty met Sebastian Wolfram, executive brewmaster for the Rocky Mount Mills Brewery Incubator. The year prior, while participating in a business panel at her alma mater, Shaw University, Beatty connected with Brianna Brake, a home brewer and NC Central University law student who aspired to become a commercial brewer. Those serendipitous meetings contributed to a mutually beneficial collaboration and the creation of Harlem Brew South and Spaceway Brewing Company. Brake's vision of a brewery inspired by Afrofuturism, the reimagining of arts, culture, and technology with overlays of African traditions. I decided that opening a collaborative brewery at Rocky Mount Mills was a great way to have a presence in my home state and bring brewing education to the Rocky Mount community, Beatty says. I saw a lot of need and an amazing opportunity to engage that community, so I approached them about doing a brewing training program, and I already had a curriculum from Harvard where I was teaching brewing. The plan started coming together with Beatty serving as mentor and advisor to Brake, and the two worked together on the Rocky Mount Brewery concept. But the pandemic wreaked havoc on their plans and slowed their momentum to nearly a standstill. Sales in 2020 were all but non-existent for Spaceway Brewing. Brake says Ann Harlem Brewing saw its sales drop to a fraction of pre-COVID performance. 2020 was supposed to be the year it all came together, the year for plans to happen to make me more marketable to investors. COVID shut down everybody's plans, Brake says. She launched a GoFundMe page on March 18, 2020, and to date has raised about $3,500 of her $15,000 goal. For now, all of my operations are in Rocky Mount. I'm brewing at Rocky Mountain Mills and opened a tap room in December, and I'm working on a project to open a brewery and tap room in downtown Durham, shooting for the fall, like August or September timeframe, Brake says. At the Rocky Mountain Incubator, Spaceway shares a canning line with the other breweries in the incubator and is distributing through Harlem Beer's distribution arm. Spaceway beers are sold in a number of retail outlets, including Food Lion, Whole Foods, the Fresh Market, and local bottle shops and tap rooms. It's small. We can only do about 30 barrels a month at Rocky Mountain Mills, but expanding at a location in Durham will let us increase production, Brake says. I've been applying for grants and loans. It would take at least $350,000 to get started in Durham, she adds, and I'm actively seeking investors. Similarly, Beatty says Harlem Brew has had to rely on retail outlets in recent months. We've had to depend on grocery stores and bottle shops for selling our beer, Celeste says. The keg program was suspended. Literally millions of kegs had to be thrown out from breweries all across the country, and we had to suspend production in our upstate New York brewery. We've been shipping small quantities to core restaurant and bar accounts that are still open and that have the ability to do delivery and takeout. Pre-pandemic, 70% of her company's sales were to bars and restaurants, with some retail accounts as well. In addition to selling draft and cans, there was always a large volume of kegs sold. With our last batch, we produced 10 kegs and only sold 3. Unless we have a specific order, we can't risk doing kegs now, Beatty says, adding that her hope is to return to the pre-pandemic business model. Until then, she will continue to push online sales, curbside delivery, and grocery store sales. Because Harlem Brewing needed more production capacity than could be done at the incubator site, she started a partnership with Fortnite Brewing in Cary to create Harlem Brew beer at that location for distribution. The first brewmaster class and small batch brewing will begin next month at Rocky Mountain Mills. I want to take what we do in Rocky Mount to other towns, other beer deserts, many of which have serious economic and social issues, Beatty says. And we also have a couple of news items in the Promise Of section. Report finds disparities in COVID vaccinations. The Kaiser Family Foundation studied the 41 states reporting vaccination data by race, ethnicity, and found a consistent pattern of Black and Latinx people receiving smaller shares of COVID vaccinations compared to their shares of COVID cases, deaths attributed to COVID, and their shares of the total population. In North Carolina, as of March 1, Kaiser found that only 16% of the Black population had received COVID vaccinations. However, Black people represent 21% of the total population, 25% of COVID deaths, and 21% of COVID cases. Looking across 35 states, including North Carolina, Kaiser found the vaccination rate among white people was over 2.5 times higher than the rate for Latinx people, 13% versus 5%, and nearly twice as high as the rate for Black people, 13% versus 7%. The study found the vaccination rate for Asian people is closer to the rate for white people in most reporting states. Self-help highlights sustainability. The Center for Community Self-Help, a Durham-based family of nonprofit organizations that includes two credit unions, a loan fund, and a research and policy affiliate, issued a policy report urging investment in an inclusive, clean energy economy that would benefit low-wealth communities. The Climate Imperative and Community Finance Report highlights ways to fight climate change, expedite transition to clean energy, and the role of the federal government in aligning financial incentives to reduce the disparate impact of climate change on low-wealth communities and communities of color that are more vulnerable to the economic and health impacts of environmental degradation. Since 1989, Self-Help has invested $357 million to create a positive environmental impact in the communities it serves. It extended PPP financing of $4.2 million to 31 environmental organizations. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. They make art more accessible. A former leader at the North Carolina Museum of Art has launched an effort to better connect artists and collectors. Marjorie Hodges, the former director of external relations and special projects for the museum, has launched Art Suite, a site that includes about 24 curated artists with a wide range of price points. Hodges says she and fellow co-founder Alan Thomas of Wilson, a major collector and philanthropist, wanted to fill a void. "I feel like the number one way we can support artists is to share their work and encourage people to collect art," she says. "That was the premise." Hodges notes that online art sales have surged in the pandemic. She and Thomas, given their backgrounds in the art world, felt they could carefully select outstanding artists who aren't restricted to only selling on their sites. They also serve as consultants to collectors and corporations and have exhibition space in the Hudson in downtown Raleigh, with plans for interactive experiences as the pandemic recedes. Art on the Art Suite site starts at roughly $500 for some paintings and rises from there, depending on the work. "It's all about trying to give collectors, especially new collectors, lots of options," Hodges says. Firms may move back to the office. The arrival of vaccines has companies across the U.S. weighing when and whether to return to the office, as the work environment could look different ahead. "I believe what people want, need, and deserve, if it's available, is flexibility. That is something that has worked well for us," Sharon Bryson, the CEO of the North Carolina Association of Certified Public Accountants, said on a call hosted by Catapult, the human resources organization based in Raleigh and Charlotte. "One of the questions is whether organizations are as effective working from home, but Bryson said her group will continue some form of hybrid work." She said the NCACPA has made no decisions on specific timing as far as returning to the office. "We just don't feel that that's necessary. There's so much stress," she said. "While things are looking better and feeling better, I'm amazed by what our team has been able to do remotely, and I will continue to lead a flexible charge as we make decisions in the future." New Triangle anchor gets big send-off in Tampa. An incoming anchor at the Triangle CBS affiliate got a remarkable send-off from his former market of Tampa. Rod Carter will join CBS 17 as an evening anchor on the weekday team after a long run at WFLA, which is also a part of the Nexstar Media Group. Carter has deep ties to Florida, having studied at Florida A&M University and worked for 20 years at WFLA, including as a weekend anchor. He also hosted multiple community events in the Tampa area. Tampa Mayor Jane Castor named March 12 Rod Carter Day and called him a gem. Snoopy's land sells for big price. Biz hated to see Snoopy's hot dogs on 600 Hillsborough Street in Raleigh close, but we now can understand why. The property sold for $1.6 million February 26 to Centerline Digital CEO Charles Long's Glenboro LLC. The LLC is managed by Long and addressed to Centerline Digital's Raleigh headquarters, according to financial filings. Long hasn't divulged plans for the property, which sold for $300,000 in 2010. Snoopy's opened its downtown location in 1990 and still has four other locations, including another Hillsborough Street location near NC State University. Steve Webb opened the first Snoopy's in Raleigh on Wake Forest and Whitaker Mill Roads in 1978, and the operation has expanded since. If you're searching for a Kitty Hawk, you're not alone. Kitty Hawk is the top pick for Americans who are starting to travel again as the weather gets warmer and relief from the pandemic is in sight, says a popular rental company. Vacationers are combing Airbnb for places like the North Carolina beach town where they can relax. Plans for additional vaccine rollouts also drove traffic to other locations, including Southern Maine, Round Top, Texas, and Cape San Blas, Florida. And finally, and the Emmy goes to Film on Shaw. Biz says congratulations to Raleigh native Travis Mitchell, whose documentary on Shaw University recently won a regional Emmy from the National Academy of Television Arts and Sciences. "I would not be where I am today without Shaw University, the school that educated my mother, my father, my aunts and uncles," Mitchell said. "I grew up on the campus of Shaw. When the opportunity presented itself to me as chief content officer of UNC-TV to finish the film, it was a huge honor." And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Tech and Startups page written by Lauren Onisorge. The main headline, Full Throttle in Durham. California firm wants to move quickly in Durham push. California gene therapy company Adverum Biotechnologies' 200-job expansion in Durham, announced in January, meant a hot start for economic developers in 2021. Now, executives with the firm say their plan for the Durham facility has become even more critical. Leon Patterson, president and chief financial officer at Adverum, says an accelerated timeline for its clinical stage treatment for wet age-related macular degeneration, or AMD, a chronic eye condition that causes blurred vision or blind spots, further emphasizes the triangle. The treatment, which executives have said they hope will deliver a one-time in-office treatment to preserve patient sight for life, is about to enter phase 3 trials, a major milestone toward its potential approval. Based on conversations with U.S. regulators, the firm is moving to initiate not one but two global phase 3 trials, which could mean regulatory submission, called a biologics license application, in 2024. That means commercialization could be on the horizon, and the North Carolina facility is expected to supply the commercial product for that launch. The plan right now, Patterson says, is to have the facility up and running by the end of 2023. That will enable us to have the commercial product available, Patterson says, noting there is still a lot of work to be done. That includes the hiring of staff expected to start this year. We're on track to really get construction up and running, she says. There's lots of work with the design that has to happen. It's a great facility. We'll just have to reshape it to meet the needs of our organization. And there's a section with some general information about Adverum Biotechnologies. Clinical stage gene therapy firm targeting treatments that could disrupt eye diseases. Announced 200-job expansion in Durham in January. Pick Durham over Massachusetts and California. Total investment of $80 million. Average salaries for Durham operation of more than $90,000. How an entrepreneur leveraged the pandemic to create a toy startup. A national emergency, that's how U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris described the issue of women leaving the workforce at higher rates than men during the pandemic. But for a precious few, it has meant opportunities. Rachel Classy is one of those moms fortunate enough to turn it around, having left her job at TeamWorks last summer to care for her two kids. Classy has leveraged the experience into the creation of a new educational toy subscription startup in Durham, Tiny Earth Toys, which recently had its official launch. A West Coast transplant, Classy has always been interested in environmental causes, but it wasn't until staying at home with her two young daughters that she realized the sustainability problem was in her own house. Plastic toys everywhere. So Classy decided to solve the problem, creating a toy subscription service that, instead of giving kids plastic playthings, allows them to borrow high-quality toys made from natural materials for a four-month stretch. Then, families send the toys back and get a new crate of developmentally appropriate toys. Classy put up a website, and within days, 100 families signed on with their interest. Last fall, she launched a pilot, and recently the product launched to a wait list of more than 350 families. Tiny Earth Toys is angel-funded, having raised $275,000 earlier this year, according to a securities filing. Woman-led fund raises money for growth companies. Quietly, a Chapel Hill investment firm backed by some high-powered women wants to raise $20 million. Leeds Illuminate invests in education and workforce development, providing growth capital for late-stage companies in partnership with New York-based Leeds Equity Partners. The company, securities filings reveal, is trying to raise $20 million for its Leeds Illuminate Global Fund 3. Leeds Illuminate was co-founded by Susan Cates and Elizabeth Chow last year. Cates is the former president and executive development at UNC Kenan Flagler Business School, having led the creation of its online MBA program, according to her bio. Chu is a former general partner at New Markets Venture Partners. Stephanie Newman, a former principal at SJF Ventures, has joined as managing director. In a section called Big number. The number is $11.8 million. That's the number for a new venture capital fund from Morgan Creek Capital Management of Chapel Hill. CEO Mark Yusko is launching the Morgan Creek Consumer Opportunities Fund aimed at consumer-facing employees. And in a section called She Said It, there's a quote from Brooke Markovicius, CEO of Allobe, a platform for moms looking for freelance projects. As moms, we have so much power and so many good skills that we have learned, from conflict resolution with a two-year-old to doing a lot of multitasking. We're built for entrepreneurship when you think about it. And also in a COVID-19 section, we have a series of quotes. Executives look back on a year of the pandemic. A year ago, the pandemic pushed many into remote work as American companies scrambled to respond to COVID-19. A year later, with the vaccines rolling out, here's how some Triangle executives recall what it was like in March 2020. It was shocking, and here we are a year later. This is just a reminder, things can change on a dime. Thad Tarkington, CEO of Second Nature. It wasn't like we didn't understand and weren't capable of working remotely. What was different is we had never led a company remotely. And that's from Mitch Perry, Chief Financial Officer of Blue Cross and Blue Shield of NC. Nobody packed up their office. Nobody thought you'd truly have to work from home. It's like, take your laptop and see where things go from here. That's Lisa Grimes, CEO of PerThread. And finally, from Greg Lowe, CEO of Cree. It was surreal for sure because we had never been in a situation like this, quite frankly. We got the governor's order, and it was on a Friday, and then over the weekend, things changed. Monday, we just didn't come back to work again. Now we turn to the On Real Estate page, written by Caleb Harshberger. Big change in Hayes Barton. Developer buys historic Josephus Daniels home in Raleigh. The city of Raleigh's recent decision to delist a historical landmark has cleared the way for a local developer known for its upscale projects to buy the property with plans for a new development. Raleigh real estate firm Beacon Street recently paid $3.75 million for the Josephus Daniels House in the Hayes Barton Historic District. The company is planning a single-family residential development for the site. The property, called Wakestone, is situated on 3.89 acres at 1520 Caswell Street, south of Five Points. It previously hosted a Masonic temple, but the property is currently not being used. As Raleigh natives, we're excited about the future of this property and look forward to working with our neighbors as we finalize plans for a thoughtful development of single-family homes within the current zoning that fits seamlessly into the historic Hayes Barton neighborhood, Beacon Street said in a statement. Beacon Street's specific plans for the building are unclear. The land is currently zoned to allow for up to 4 homes per acre, which would allow for up to 15 homes on the site. The city stripped the property of its landmark status in February after fielding a request by representatives for the Masonic Temple of Raleigh, citing Josephus Daniels' history of racism and white supremacy. The group had owned the property since 1950, according to county records, which also show it had a total assessed value of $4.1 million as of January. The Masonic Temple disclosed it was looking to sell the property and emphasized that the racist legacy of Daniels warranted removing the historic designation. Wakestone, built in 1920, served as Daniels' home until his death in 1948. Daniels, a longtime publisher of the News and Observer, was among the leading perpetrators of the 1898 Wilmington insurrection and a vocal proponent of white supremacy. Last June, the former Daniels Magnet Middle School in Raleigh changed its name to remove the reference to Daniels. It's now called Oberlin Magnet Middle School. Also last summer, a statue of Daniels, who also served as Secretary of the Navy and was an ambassador to Mexico, was removed from Nash Square at the request of his descendants. How dinner in Raleigh led to a $65 million India deal. In January 2020, CBRE Senior Vice President Carlton Midyet III was having dinner with a friend at the Stanberry Restaurant on North Blunt Street in downtown Raleigh, when an interesting real estate opportunity came up. The friend, who Midyet declined to name, said he and his family had some land they might be interested in selling, a prominent property in India, perfect for a major multifamily development. he does some home building, and he said, you know, we have this big piece of land in India, Midyet recalls. From there, sitting in a restaurant in downtown Raleigh resulted in what I think is the biggest land sale in India last year. Several months after the dinner, the deal closed with an Indian real estate firm, Raja Pushpa Infra Private Limited, paying the equivalent of $65.86 million, or 4.855 billion rupees in India. The deal included 17.14 acres of land plus 3.36 acres of joint development in Hyderabad, a city in southern India with a metro population estimated at around 10 million. The seller of the 17 acres, Narsinghi Investors Limited, is made up of a collection of families with members in India and Raleigh. Midyet says the buyer plans to develop a massive multi-family high-rise on the property. CBRE announced the deal on March 1. The deal is the result of more than a year of effort by CBRE South Asia Private Limited and CBRE Raleigh's Land Services Group, including Midyet, Barry Bowling, Chester Allen, and Tiffany Hilburn. It's really a testament to the global integrated community that we're working with these days, Midyet says. Without the internet and the platform of CBRE, there's no way that this thing would have happened. He adds, it was a really fun transaction. We'd love to do another. Charlotte developer eyes Durham again. Charlotte developer Trinity Capital Advisors is at it again with another massive industrial project in the Triangle, this time aiming for over 270,000 square feet of space near Research Triangle Park, as demand for industrial space in the region continues to explode. The company recently bought 20 acres in Durham for 147 exchange, a proposed industrial project calling for a 274,370 square foot Class A industrial building. No tenants have yet signed up for the space, though the company has begun fielding interest. Texas developer begins work on Durham project. A Houston developer with a growing footprint in the Triangle has started work on a massive apartment project in downtown Durham. Camden Property Trust recently began work on Phase 1 of Camden Durham, calling for 354 apartments and 6,000 square feet of commercial space, with a second phase of roughly 60 units. The project is on 3.4 acres at 4041 Dillard Street. Camden bought the land from Lennar last November for $15.2 million. And finally, we have a big number, $59.4 million. That's the price Atlanta-based investor Cortland paid for a new apartment community in Cary recently as it continued to make moves in the region. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Retail and Restaurants page written by Erica Wells. Fenton seeks new options. Developers confident despite loss of Wegmans store. The loss of its anchor tenant is unlikely to phase the long-term prospects of a massive mixed-use development currently underway in Cary. Fenton, which is under construction off Carytown Boulevard near Interstate 40, is based on a concept that will allow it to succeed despite Wegmans pulling plans for the store there, one a retail expert says. The focus on a live-work-play perspective gives the project a greater degree of flexibility and creativity to create a wider experience that accentuates that full-day opportunity, says Ethan Chernofsky, Vice President of Marketing at Placer.ai, a platform that analyzes retail foot traffic. Hines, one of the developers behind Fenton, said in a statement that 80% of the development's retail space has been pre-leased and that the company is in discussions with other leading grocers who have expressed interest in joining the project. That's not surprising, considering Southwest Wake County has become a hotbed for new grocery stores and retail development as the area is in the midst of a population boom, and the thriving mixed concept fits perfectly with the area, Chernofsky says. Wegman said the decision to cancel its plans for Fenton was driven by the success it's having with its three other locations already open in the region, West Cary, Raleigh, and Chapel Hill. Multiple tenants for Fenton say they're not worried by the loss of Wegmans. Acclaimed chef Scott Crawford, whose restaurant, Crawford Brothers Steakhouse, will be part of Fenton, says the change is expected in this industry, especially amid the pandemic. Working with Fenton has been nothing but positive, and they're very committed to working with this community, Crawford says. The one thing that 2020 taught me is to embrace change and not make knee-jerk reactions to it. Change is positive. Five-star dining returns to the Umstead Hotel. A high-end restaurant in Cary is reintroducing its five-star dining experience, the latest step toward the hospitality industry in the Triangle recovering from the pandemic. Herons at the Umstead Hotel and Spa, which once again this year earned 5 stars in Forbes Travel Guide Awards, will offer a new menu beginning March 25 after changing its traditional style because of coronavirus-related restrictions. Chef Stephen Devereaux Green worked on the revised menu, which will include a customizable 4-course price-fix meal with beverage pairings, with help from Alyssa Campo, the hotel's farm manager. Executive pastry chef Leah Benedetto, who has over 10 years of experience, has joined Herons after working at the Peninsula Beverly Hills, a 5-star hotel. Herons, the only 5-star restaurant in North Carolina, has also upgraded its kitchen and dining room as part of a hotel-wide $14 million renovation. The project also included a remodel of all 150 rooms and the bar and lounge and public areas that started in November 2019 and was completed during the pandemic. Last spring, the Umstead closed amid the statewide shutdown order at the start of the pandemic. The hotel reopened in June and Herons reopened in December. Durham Brewery ready to open new tap room downtown. The Glass Jug Beer Lab finally has an opening date for its new location. The tap room will open at 545 Foster Street across from Durham Central Park on March 29 after pandemic-related delays hindered it from opening last summer. Chris Creech and his wife Katie co-own the brewery. It's new space is in the building that houses the Foster on the Park apartments that required more than $400,000 to transform. The new tap room will seat up to 120 guests, feature original brews, wine, and cider on draft with non-alcoholic options, and add about 10 jobs. The company started as a bottle shop in 2014 and expanded in 2018 to include the outdoor beer garden on Highway 55 at the Greenwood Commons Shopping Center. And we have a numbers section. That number, $21 million, that's the total capital investment from the hospitality and retail industry in Wake County in the last fiscal year, according to a report from Wake County Economic Development. And in a She Said It section, we have a quote from Ashley Christensen, chef and proprietor of AC Restaurants, on the legal action she has taken against an insurer to pay out COVID-related claims after her restaurants stopped service. "I bought this class action lawsuit to try and force Cincinnati Insurance to pay this coverage, which will be critical to ensuring restaurants across our state survive this devastating pandemic." And now we turn to the Viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor-in-chief of the Triangle Business Journal. The headline, "Will Rising Mortgage Rates Cool Down Housing?" The Federal Reserve may not be in charge of setting the nation's mortgage rates, but its actions indirectly influence the rates consumers pay on their fixed-rate home loans when they sign up for a new mortgage or refinance. While Fed Chairman Jerome Powell continues to stress any big upward movement in the federal funds rate, borrowing costs for shorter-term loans, which currently is set at about 0.25, is not necessary, signs are beginning to emerge in the mortgage world that suggest the days of 2.5% 30-year fixed mortgages may be over. As of the writing of this column, the benchmark 30-year fixed mortgage rate was 3.24% with an APR of 3.42%. The average 30-year fixed VA mortgage rate is 2.96% with an APR of 3.19%. So the rates are inching up, meaning buyers looking at the Triangle to buy homes may have to bring down their price point to keep the same monthly mortgage payments. The February statistics from the Triangle MLS report suggest that if interest rates keep rising, the demand for homes priced $250,000 to $400,000 will rise even more. In turn, the demand for homes in the $400,000 to $800,000 range may cool down a bit. Last month alone, among the 950-plus homes listed for sale in Wake County, with the price range between $200,000 and $400,000, more than 72% of them have pending marked beside them, and almost all of them sold at their listing price. Conversely, during February, for the 300-plus homes listed for sale in the $500,000 to $800,000 range in Wake, the cumulative pending sits at about 64%, and that's before the rise in interest rates in recent days. In February 2017, the Triangle recorded about 3 months of housing supply. This past month, the housing supply was at 1 month. So interest rates alone will not be able to mitigate the growing imbalance between supply and demand. Home builders argue that it is tough to build homes in the $200,000 to $400,000 range and still make money, given what was paid for the land and cost of construction materials. Couple that with custom builders and high-end home builders scooping up a big chunk of available labor in the Triangle, and the headwinds are evident. As the Fed's March 17 meeting indicated, Powell and his team will be reluctant to move on rates until the 10-year Treasury hits the 2% mark. It currently sits around 1.6%, so there is not going to be any movement on the rates for the next few quarters, at least under current fiscal conditions. As of the Triangle housing market, our peak time for housing activity is just starting and will go until mid-May. One would think that may mean sellers will list their homes at an egregious level and someone is out there willing to scoop it up after offering even more for it. If the 30-year fixed rate starts inching up in the 3.5% range and we hit summer, housing activity will likely slow down, and that may be the start of a rebalancing phase of the Triangle housing market for the next 2 years. Because when existing homes with no price change sell in an average of 15 days at 102% of the list price, rebalance is needed. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to A Better World, inside the Triangle's nonprofit scene. We'll start with nonprofit briefs. Ammons Foundation supports nonprofit capital projects. 11 North Carolina nonprofits will get a total of $336,194 to support their capital projects, thanks to support from the Jandy Ammons Foundation. The foundation has given more than $2 million over the past 8 years. This year, the recipients are A Blessing Incorporated in Bunn, A Lot of Love, Chapel Hill, CAM, Raleigh, Coastal Land Trust, Ocracoke, North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences in Raleigh, and the North Carolina State Engineering Foundation, also in Raleigh, Poe Center for Health Education in Raleigh, Preservation NC in Raleigh, Rex Healthcare Foundation, also in Raleigh, Transplanting Traditions Community Farm in Hillsboro, and Ware Creek Community in Blunts Creek. Jane Ammons is an active community volunteer, and her husband, Andy, is the local developer. Charitable giving rises in the U.S. in 2020. Charitable giving went up in the U.S. in 2020 as Americans jumped in during a time of need for so many. The Black Bod Institute, which tracks more than $40 billion in giving from 8,500 organizations, found a 3.3% rise in giving during fourth quarter 2020 compared to the year before. For the year, the Institute found giving rose 2% over the previous year. Chiesi USA gives back. Chiesi USA, the U.S. affiliate of Chiesi Pharmaceutical SPA, contributed more than $800,000 in 2020 to the community, the company announced. As an employee-led program, Chiesi employees supported 215 charitable organizations with 1,100 hours of time or donations in 2020. When the COVID-19 pandemic began, we realized it was imperative to strengthen that support as our nonprofit partners required additional resources to serve those in need, says John Zwinski, General Manager and CEO of Chiesi USA. Chick-fil-A grant applications are now open. Chick-fil-A is looking for applicants for its True Inspiration Awards, where it will award $5 million in grants to 34 nonprofits that are Black-led or impacting communities of color in the areas of education, homelessness, and hunger. The 2020 True Inspiration Awards grants range from $50,000 to $350,000 for organizations in the U.S. and Canada. Applications are open until May 31. And finally, Raleigh nonprofits get Pope Foundation grants. The John William Pope Foundation is supporting three nonprofits based in Raleigh: the Green Chair Project, NAMI, or NAMI, North Carolina, and Raleigh Little Theater. Raleigh Little Theater received a $100,000 grant, and the Green Chair Project and NAMI, North Carolina, received $50,000. The theater company will renovate restrooms for better access. The Green Chair Project will use their grant to expand their transportation fleet, and NAMI North Carolina will create a new media center that will allow them to reach more individuals with mental conditions and their families and caretakers. Pope was the driving force behind Variety Wholesalers. His son, Art, is now CEO. And in general news, our next story is written by Lauren Onasorge. The headline, layoffs hit SaaS amid digital transformation. Cary-based analytics giant SaaS Institute has confirmed about 100 layoffs, cuts the company attributes to the digital transformation that's been ongoing since before the pandemic. SaaS spokeswoman Shannon Heath says since the beginning of COVID-19, SaaS has protected jobs impacted by the pandemic. But changes to business operations have impacted positions. SaaS is continually assessing business needs and customer preferences, she says. The ways we work, learn, attend events, and much more have changed forever. Permanent changes to business operations, some directly related to digital transformation of the business that were already in motion before the pandemic, affected several roles within the company. Heath says SaaS expects that many of its employees will prefer to continue to work remotely, leading to the difficult decision to reduce some positions that support events, training, and on-site operations. Heath says that including positions impacted by digital transformation efforts and the reduced need for on-site support, about 100 employees have been let go. And finally, in the Triangle Business Journal, we'll look at this week's Business Pulse survey. The question, will you go to fall events? Total number of responses, 171. 76% say yes, 19% not sure yet, and 5% say no. And we're going to go ahead and stop there as we have run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Today's program is generously underwritten by Brian Lee Funeral Homes, located in Raleigh, Garner, and Anger. They can be reached at 919-832-8225. That's 919-832-8225. They believe every life is unique and deserves to be honored so that every funeral is as unique and special as the person it represents. If you have any comments or questions, please give us a call at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.